Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Raven Real Spills. This is your girl, Raven the Serial Poet, come to bring to y'all another entertaining show. This is 31 Days of Hard. This is Series 19. And I hope everybody has had a great day, because I know I most definitely did. But what I do want to say before I start everything is, to those of you who have been DMing me on Instagram and things like that, with suggestions of things to look up and things like that, I want to thank y'all personally. If you listen to it, thank y'all. And I also want to say thank y'all whoever came and listened to the playback, because I do notice everything. I'm a very observative person, so thank you for that as well. So before we get into the first hour of 31 Days of Hard, Ghost Tales, Terror Tales, and everything in between, don't forget to call in. The number is 914-205-5813. That is 914-205-5813. Let's get into these stories.
This story happened to me on a Thursday night, when I was home alone in my apartment complex. I live with my roommate Josh, who was usually out with his girlfriend, so that gave me the luxury of having the place to myself. I was video chatting with three classmates of mine on Facebook Messenger. Their names were Eric, Craig, and Cindy. This was my first interaction with them, as our professor selected us to be in a group project together. Throughout the night, we brainstormed ideas while getting more acquainted with one another. This is when the story gets a bit weird. Eric spontaneously asked the group chat,
"Hey guys, want to see something cool?"
"What is it?"
"Getting an A+ in this project would be cool."
Sure, man, what's up? Eric sends the group chat a photo. I click the chat icon and see a disturbing image of a woman with her arms and legs missing. What the hell?
Ew! Why are you sending us this?
Dude, where the hell did you get that photo?
I'll tell you, but you guys really need to keep this a secret. Promise me you won't tell anyone.
This isn't marketing related, but okay, I guess.
Sure, dude. Please don't tell me you were the sicko who took that pic.
I didn't. I actually got the photo from the dark web.
Dude, you go on the dark web?
What's the dark web?
Supposedly, it's this hidden part of the internet where you can buy illegal stuff. I personally wasn't that educated about the dark web, but I did hear rumors about it growing up. I've always acknowledged the existence of these kinds of things growing up, but I was still unaware as to what potential atrocities lie within the online world. Eric then says,
yeah, I just recently started getting into it. I found the photo from one of the forums I came across called Homemade Dolls. Here's the full-size picture.
He then sends us the exact same photo, except this time it had a description box next to it with the title, Doll Number 20. Why the hell, of all people, did I have to be in a group project with this weirdo? The details in the description stated inhumane acts that can be performed on the victims before being shipped to their buyers. I felt pretty disgusted reading the dialogue, but I was still somewhat skeptical about the whole thing. It was hard to deny its legitimacy, though. The authenticity of the image looked too real to be a hoax.
To be honest, this looks photoshopped.
I don't know. It looks pretty real to me.
Dude, that's disgusting. Why do you even go on sites like that?
Well, I only go on it occasion...
Midway through Eric's sentence, a random user joins the video chat.
Who's that?
I don't know.
I swear to God, we better not be getting hacked.
Eric, is this one of your stupid friends from the dark web? I'm gonna call the cops if it is.
That's when I decide to move my mouse cursor to exit the video chat.
Why the hell isn't this working? Come on, work, goddammit!
My cursor was resisting to move no matter how many times I clicked or moved my mouse. That's when the random user's video turned on. It was a guy wearing a pig mask. The mask didn't look like some dollar store knockoff. It looked like the skinned face of an actual pig. He wore it like he was Leatherface from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Hey, is anybody seeing what I'm seeing? Eric, dude, I really hope this isn't a stupid prank.
It's not, dude. I don't even know who that is.
Why is there a guy wearing a pig mask on my screen?
Guys, what's going on?
I don't know why, but something about that moment, I just knew. I was looking into the eyes of what true evil looks like. That's when my classmate's video chat completely froze. The only screen functioning was the pigman's. It seemed like our computers were being hijacked. I couldn't quite comprehend what was going on until I heard the pigman say,
"Can you see me? Say yes if you can hear me."
"Say it!"
I reply with, "Yes, what do you want from me?" in an uncontrollable stutter.
"You know that feeling you get when you're with someone for so long, every single day just drags and becomes a routine? I just want something new and fresh, you know? Something vibrant that will make me feel alive again. I just need a new doll. What do you say? Does that sound like a brilliant plan to you?"
I was completely appalled by what was transpiring. That's when I hear a muffled female's voice in the background. The pigman then swivels the camera towards the direction of the muffled voice, only to reveal a woman with no arms and legs. She had duct tape on her mouth and a chain bound around her neck. The woman was flailing her severed arms wildly in a desperate attempt to escape. A couple seconds later, the pigman approaches her while holding an axe, the kind of axe lumberjacks use to chop down trees. I began to hyperventilate as I knew the inevitable fate this woman was about to endure. He then raises the axe up in the air. I begin screaming from the top of my lungs,
"Leave her alone or I'm calling the cops!"
As I took my last glance at the woman, I realized that it was the same woman in the photo that Eric sent. That's when the pigman smashes the axe against the woman's skull repeatedly. I practically leap up from my chair and begin to vomit.
Oh. This sadistic display was unbearable. What the hell is going on? Someone tell me I'm dreaming. There's no way this is real.
I look back on the screen, only to see nothing. Like the whole thing was just a bad dream, or a figment of my imagination.
What the hell just happened? I know I'm not going crazy.
I immediately messaged my classmates in the group chat saying,
please tell me you guys saw all of that. Did any of you see the pigman? We need to report him.
Yeah, I briefly saw him, but then my video chat ended.
Same here. That was weird as hell.
Must have been a hacker. Thank God my screen went back to normal. Did you see anything, Terrence?
I respond as nonchalantly as I can, saying, yeah, basically what you guys saw. I think it's best that we just put this behind us and move on from here, you know? I didn't know if that was the right decision. I didn't want to further escalate the situation. Acknowledging the pigman's existence was one thing, but going into further detail about afterwards just felt unnecessary. This is the part where I wish the story ends. It's been a year since the incident. I ended up dropping out and taking the semester off due to the mental trauma I endured. I now work at a local retail store. I was coming home from work one day, and I saw an envelope sitting in my mail slot. I open it and discover the most horrifying thing that sends shivers down my spine. It was a picture of my classmate, Cindy. Except, she had no legs and no arms. The picture was titled, Doll Number 21.
I remember waking up in a steel cage, locked inside a limitless white room. The room looked like it had no end, just my bed, the cage, and a swarm of distorted figures surrounding me. There were hundreds of them, and they all looked like they were possessed, like something out of the movie The Exorcist. Where the hell am I? This can't be real. I must be dreaming. I couldn't distinguish whether these people were human or not. But all I can say is that I was overwhelmingly frightened by the over-exaggerated mouths of these creatures. They just kept tormenting me like I was a test subject in a lab experiment gone wrong. Please, stop it. Stop it. What the hell do you want from me? Leave me alone. That's when I closed my eyes and had a nostalgic moment. Almost like I went back in time. I remember opening my eyes and waking up to my bedroom. I can't live like this anymore. My body was dripping with sweat, and my bed sheets were completely drenched. I was honestly convinced that I was living in an alternate reality, trapped in a never-ending nightmare. Taking my prescribed meds really helped with my schizophrenic tendencies, as it would numb down the hallucinations that I experienced on occasion. My parents understood my condition, but my sister Jenny didn't. Me and her never got along growing up, as she would always tease me about my condition. Well, tease me about my other condition. I also have obsessive-compulsive disorder, otherwise known as OCD. I had a disorder where I couldn't touch, taste, nor bear the sight of pineapples. I know this sounds quite bizarre, but it's haunted me throughout my existence. It was a compulsion that I had developed at an early age, and have grown a great deal of disdain for. The tough segmented skin and the pointy leaves was always something I fathomed as to why one could think such a thing was edible. I always thought a pineapple was equivalent to eating a porcupine, just a pointy object that humans have to butcher down to consume. As understanding as my parents were about my condition, I still feel like there was an underlying favoritism towards my sister Jenny. I can tell they enjoyed Jenny's company more, as she was less high maintenance than myself, to say the least. Growing up in the same household as her really made me more uncomfortable than I already was. She would use my condition as fuel for her bullying antics. I remember when I was in school, Jenny would always text me when she arrived to pick me up. The annoying thing was that she intentionally texted the pineapple emoji, as opposed to just texting "I'm here," just to get under my skin. I remember another time where I invited my friend Steven to come over to my place. "Hey Jenny, can you order some food for me and Steven?"
"What do you want?"
"Anything but the thing you know I don't like. Please?"
"How about I get you guys a pizza and 2 drinks? Sound good?"
"Yeah, thanks sis." "Dude, is that your sister?" "Yeah, why?" "Oh, she's hot. I mean, she's got a lot of tattoos." "Shut up, dude. Stop checking out my sister." "Hey, dude, I was just looking at her tattoos. She seems like a pretty cool person." "Huh, you wouldn't be saying that if you lived with her." "Well, I only need to live with her for one night." "Ow! I was just joking, sheesh." About 30 minutes later, the pizza guy arrives and delivers the pizza.
"Here you go, boys. Eat up."
I open the box, only to discover a pepperoni pizza, topped with pineapples. "What the hell is this? Why did you put pineapples on the pizza?"
"Just tell your friend to eat the pineapples, duh. All the other toppings sucked."
"You suck. I wish you never lived." It's been a couple months since that incident. My hatred for Jenny has unfortunately become far greater as time went on. I was honestly convinced she had a compulsion herself for making my life a living hell. There was this one occasion where the final straw was drawn. I remember watching TV in my bedroom when I see Jenny lurking behind the doorway, holding a sheet of paper. She began waving the paper at me while saying,
"Hey Jake, I have 2 surprises I want to show you."
"It'd be a surprise if you moved out, 'cause I'd love that."
"Don't be rude. I have a drawing I made for you."
"What is it?" Jenny then reveals a hand-drawn picture of a pineapple with SpongeBob on it. "What the hell is wrong with you? Why can't you stop tormenting me?"
"I have 1 more surprise for you. I got another tattoo."
Jenny then lowers the sheet of paper, revealing a tattoo of a pineapple on her chest.
"Surprise!
Get the hell out of my room, you freak!" I hate her. I hate her so much. I hate her so much. I hate her so much. A couple hours pass by, and it was time to go to bed. I couldn't sleep that night, as my blood pressure felt like it was at an all-time high. I could feel my head throb in pain, as I became more irritated with the thought of my sister's existence. Why the hell would she get a tattoo of a pineapple? What kind of sister does that to her brother? It was about 1 a.m. in the morning when I ultimately decided to go to Jenny's room and confront her about her derogatory behavior towards me. While approaching her room, I can hear Jenny's voice subtly echo louder in my head saying,
"Surprise!"
Over and over again.
"Surprise! Surprise! Surprise!"
I then open her bedroom door, only to see a pineapple sitting on top of her bed. Is this supposed to be another stupid orchestrated prank? That's when I grabbed a pair of scissors from the top of the nightstand and began piercing the pineapple over and over again, stabbing and stabbing and stabbing. Good luck sleeping on top of this mess, loser. Sworn it was a pineapple. No. No. No, no, no. I didn't do anything. It wasn't me. I decided to close my eyes and recite over and over again in my head, "Please be a dream. Please be a dream. Please be a dream." That's when I opened my eyes again, only to see myself back inside a steel cage. I was still in a white room, surrounded by hundreds of distorted creatures. But then my vision started becoming clearer. I realized that I wasn't in a cage. I was in a jail cell. Those distorted figures weren't creatures. They were men in orange jumpsuits. I now remember. I am in jail for the murder of my sister Jenny.
Story happened to me on a Saturday night. It happened when I was with my girlfriend, who we'll call Lisa for the sake of the story. I was sitting on my bed watching TV while Lisa was on her laptop working on a school report for her English class. It was due the following Monday, which kept her busy on the laptop for the majority of the weekend. My parents were out of town, so we had the house to ourselves. I'd just like to point out that Lisa and I were polar opposites from each other. I say this because she was a goth who fantasized over dark and morbid kind of things. I was the complete opposite from that. However, our different personalities didn't stop us from pursuing a relationship with one another, as we'd been together for about 4 months now. I'd also like to point out that Lisa was extremely socially awkward if she was talking to anyone other than myself. There was a time where I invited her over to a family dinner with my parents. Lisa was understandably a bit shy at first, but as the night progressed, it turned out to be less awkward than I anticipated.
Near the end of dinner, my dad asked Lisa,
"So Lisa, if you could have anything in the world other than Jack, what would it be?"
I don't know if I feel comfortable answering that.
What do you mean? What else would you want other than my son?
Harold, stop it! Sweetie, you can tell us only if you want.
I could tell Lisa was getting uncomfortable about the impromptu interrogation my parents decided to have by the look on her face.
Well, it's complicated.
To be honest, I was a little taken back by that statement, as I thought I knew everything about her. I decided to chime in saying, what do you mean, Lisa? Things took a total 180 when Lisa says,
"Don't you guys wish you could resurrect your dead loved ones?"
Sure, I mean, I guess I would.
My family found Lisa quite bizarre since that day, but oddly enough, accepted her for who she was. Fast forward to now, and that statement that Lisa made would all make sense to me. Lisa was tired of the monotony of a report, so we decided to head to the balcony. I remember both of us being out of our minds while gazing out into the horizon. Midway through, Lisa offhandedly makes an odd remark saying,
"It would be pretty cool if I could see Todd again."
Todd was Lisa's ex. I found this quite strange that she would say such a thing, considering the fact that we were both dating each other. I assumed she was out of her mind, but sadly, that didn't stop me from giving her a piece of my mind. I agitatedly said,
"Fine, go see him then. It's not like I ever liked you."
Lisa then gives me a death stare like she wanted to throw me off the balcony. I stare back at her while I casually take another... A long pause of awkward silence occurred, but then I had a nostalgic moment. I remembered Lisa mentioning something about Todd passing away just before we dated. His cause of death was due to undisclosed reasons I won't get into. Everything Lisa was saying all made sense now. She was just expressing that she wanted to see Todd again since he was no longer here with us. I attributed my lack of memory to being out of my mind, which helped make the mishap more plausible, so I extend my arm to pass it to Lisa. She then slaps the out of my hand and aggressively says,
"He was better than you anyway."
I had gotten into arguments with Lisa in the past, but I could tell she was at her boiling point this time. She then storms out of my place and immediately gets into her car. Despite being wrong in the situation, I stupidly shouted from the balcony saying,
"Fine, have fun fishing on Tinder, loser!"
She then flips me the bird and begins driving off into the distance. I eventually head back to my bedroom and continue to watch TV. About 5 minutes later, I couldn't help but feel guilty about what I did. I then decide to text Lisa saying, "Please come back to my house. I'm not trying to fight. I also have a free place in more in case you forgot." A couple minutes go by and I get no reply. That's when I start becoming more anxious. I kept contemplating whether I should call Lisa, but I didn't want to submit to the fact that I was begging for her forgiveness. I continued watching television. That's when I noticed Lisa's laptop sitting on my computer desk. She had stormed off and obviously forgot to take it with her. I noticed that Lisa had left her school report still open on a Word document, so I decided to proofread it, thinking it would be my silly way of apologizing to her. The report was titled, "Be with your loved ones, even when they're dead." This wasn't that surprising, as I knew the kind of person Lisa was, but it was also disturbing due to the circumstances that had just occurred on the balcony. I skim through the report and find Lisa talking about a relationship and how she wasn't internally happy and needed some sort of closure. I became more and more anxious the further I read into the report. She goes into detail about her past relationship with Todd and how she misses him tremendously. As I skim through more of the report, I come across a part where Lisa talks about being able to reconnect with Todd through a satanic blog she found online. To summarize what she said, it basically insinuated that you would have to go to the last spot where the person died and die the same way. That way you'll be able to reconnect with them in the afterlife. I begin panicking and call Lisa's cell phone. She then picks up the phone and says,
"What do you want?"
in a voice full of disdain and hatred.
I try to pretend like I knew nothing about the report and say, please come back. I'm sorry about everything that happened. I'm sorry about what I said.
There's no coming back from this, Jack.
That's when I hear the sound of a train honking from a distance. My heart dropped and I yelled, Lisa, where the hell are you?
Where I should have been all along.
I could hear the train getting louder and louder, like it was coming with a full head of steam towards her direction. I began shouting,
Lisa, get the hell out of there! Lisa, please, I'm sorry!
Desperately trying to stop her from what I knew she was about to do.
Lisa, I'm sorry, okay? Get the hell out of there! Please!
Oh, Lisa, please, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. Lisa, please, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, please come back. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I was such an awful boyfriend. I'm sorry, Lisa. She then said,
see you again, Todd.
No! No, Lisa!
Oh, Lisa, please, I'm sorry. This is a true story from when I was 18 years old. It still creeps me out just thinking about it. It all started when I was heading home from my friend Jason's house. It was about 3 a.m. in the morning, so it was pretty dark outside. I was walking towards a bus stop to catch the blue night bus that ran during after hours. My friend didn't really reside within a suburban area. He was more or less closer to the downtown region. That meant there were a lot of random weirdos strolling around the streets, which definitely made me a little uncomfortable, to say the least.
You're uncomfortable. I have to sleep out here.
I decided to wait inside the glass shelter of a nearby bus stop, as I regretted my decision to take the bus this late at night, as opposed to just calling an Uber. I couldn't help but notice the dozens of flyers stuck up on the glass of the shelter. They were scattered everywhere, all varying from different things like job postings, rooms for rent, that kind of thing. There was this one flyer that really caught my attention. It was a picture of an older gentleman doing a peace gesture with his left hand. The title of the posting was called, Easy $300 in One Day, Call Me. I decided to read further into the flyer as the thought of making an easy $300 in one day seemed like a bargain one couldn't refuse. The flyer had a description which read, if you are looking to make a quick $300, then you've come to the right place. This job entails the assistance of cleaning slash chores for a period of 12 hours. Call my cell phone and the details provided below if you're interested. Regards, Philippe. I was a part-time college student, so any extra money would have definitely been beneficial to me. I decided to take a plunge at the opportunity, so I took a picture of the flyer as I see a night bus arriving towards my stop. As I boarded the bus, I refrained from calling the job posting as I didn't want to wake the employer up, so I ultimately decided to text the number instead. My text read, hello, please contact this number as I am interested in the job presented in your flyer. About 10 seconds later after sending the text, I get a call from an unknown number. I assume it was the guy in the job posting, so I answer it. Hello? A man answered back, hey, you interested in the job? Is this Philippe from the $300 a day posting? Yes, yes it is. What's your name, kid? I'm John, sir. How are you? He completely disregards my question and says, you mind coming over right now, kid? Sir, it's kinda late for that. Can we do tomorrow? Kid, listen, listen. I know it's very late at night, but both my wife and grandma are sick, so I could use a helping hand as soon as possible. I felt really uncomfortable knowing this guy was trying to guilt trip me into coming over to his house. Mind you, it was approximately 3 a.m. in the morning, which made the thought of going that much more absurd. I tell him, sir, if we can arrange this for tomorrow, it would be much more convenient for me. Kid, John, listen. you come right now, I will pay you double. $600. Take it or leave it. Whether the man was bribing me or not, I unwisely took the bait. I ended up saying, I'm on my way. I'll be there in about a half an hour, while simultaneously getting off the bus to call an Uber. I ended up getting dropped off at the address provided within the flyer and immediately began second-guessing my decision. While standing in front of the house, I get a call on my cell phone. It was from an unknown number again. I answer it and say, hello? Hey, Johnny, can you see me? No, sir. Where are you? Look at the window. I'm looking at it, but I don't see you, sir. Look a bit closer. I'm looking dead at you. Where, sir? I get startled by a firm grasp on my shoulder. Oh, I'm sorry, John. I didn't mean to scare you. I thought you could see my reflection in the window. Anyways, please allow me to show you inside my house.
Thank you, Philippe.
You can call me Creep.
Creep? Why would I call you Creep?
It's a nickname that my mom gave me as a young boy. All my close friends call me that, so I'd appreciate it if you did the same.
Okay, Philippe. I mean, Creep.
I mean, we are technically friends now, right?
Yeah, sure.
Very well, then. Let me show you inside, John.
We end up going inside, and I can't help but notice the amount of dolls laying around his house. It honestly looked like he was a hoarder that had an obsession over dolls. I decided to ask him, why do you have so many dolls?
It's just a collection that I've accumulated from my childhood. Aren't they precious, John? I built a special bond with these guys. I'll never feel alone again, you know?
At this point, I was pretty convinced that the name Creep was actually his biological name due to the creepy vibes he was giving off. I see. Well, what exactly does this job entail?
Well, for starters, my grandma and wife are unfortunately ill, so I have to take care of them since they're in bed all the time.
If you don't mind me asking, what's wrong with them?
Well, my grandma has Parkinson's, so she's unable to function without my assistance. My wife sadly got into a tragic car accident after her dance rehearsal. She's pretty much paralyzed in her legs and can't walk, so I now have to take care of her as well.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
She was so beautiful before the accident. I'm unbelievably lucky to be with such a beauty like her. We got married and had about 100 people there. It was the best wedding ever. Sorry if I'm getting carried away.
No worries. What would you like me to do for now?
You can start by vacuuming the house. Just don't go inside the bedrooms, because that's going to disturb my grandma and wife's sleep.
A couple minutes later, I begin vacuuming the hallway upstairs. The bedroom doors were slightly open, so I could vaguely view the inside of it. I remember seeing a glimpse of a woman sleeping on a bed which I assumed to be his wife. It was unfortunate to see her like that, as she was quite beautiful from what I was able to see. I noticed the man was in the other bedroom having a conversation with his grandma, so I continued vacuuming without drawing too much attention towards his direction.
Have you been feeling better? Are you okay?
The next part of the story is what sends chills down my spine. The man asked me to put the vacuum down and meet his grandma. As I approach the inside of the bedroom, I see a creepy life-size doll laying on the bed. I unhesitatingly ask him, where's your grandma?
John, don't be rude. This is my grandma.
I felt my heart fall to my stomach when he said that. I honestly wanted to get the hell out of there, but I didn't want to potentially put my life in danger, so I just went along with it and said, nice to meet you. He then said,
my grandma thinks you're really handsome, and you should come over more often.
Sure, I'll definitely come over more often.
My grandma wants me to grab her some McDonald's. Why don't you continue vacuuming the place while I do that?
Sure, creep. The man then hands me an envelope and says,
here's your $600. Thanks for being there for us.
Yeah, no problem. I then continue vacuuming the hallway as the man exits the house.
I need to get the hell out of here. This guy is a psycho.
As I drop the vacuum on the floor, I peeked inside the bedroom of where the man's wife was sleeping. To be honest, I felt really skeptical about leaving her there, so I shouted,
"Ma'am, is everything okay? Can you hear me? Ma'am, are you okay? Can you hear me?"
She didn't say anything. She honestly looked like she was heavily sedated off the meds I saw on top of the nightstand. I end up leaving the house and catching an Uber. I eventually make it home and remember the man had gave me the $600 in an envelope. Thank God I made it out of there. At least I made an easy $600. I open the envelope, only to see 6 pieces of paper. Each piece had a poorly drawn face with $100 written on it. I shouted in anger,
"What the hell is this?"
I contemplated on giving the man a piece of my mind, but I honestly didn't want any further conflict with this psycho. Just before heading to bed that night, I got a call from an unknown number. It was quite obvious that it was the creep, so I ignored it and never looked back. It's been a couple months since that creepy experience. I haven't gotten any more calls from that unknown number since. I was strolling around with my phone one day when I got a notification that someone followed me on Instagram. I noticed it was the creep from the avatar picture on his profile. I was pretty freaked out that he was able to track me down since he only knew my first name and we haven't contacted each other since. I noticed he had only one post, so I clicked it. It was a picture of the woman and the creep on the same bed. She looked sedated while wearing a wedding veil. The creep had his arm around her while there were hundreds of dolls surrounding the two. The caption read, "The best wedding an audience ever." She was so beautiful before the accident. I'm unbelievably lucky to be with such a beauty like her. We got married and had about 100 people there. It was the best wedding ever.
I live alone in a small house in Canada. And this all happened about 6.5 years ago. I opened my front door one morning to go and get some groceries and found the strangest thing waiting for me outside. Lying on my doorstep was a small USB flash drive. Almost stepped on the damn thing. Who'd put that there, I thought. It was just a generic USB stick. No label or anything. No way to know who it came from. Well, I did what anyone else would do. Took it inside and plugged it into my PC. The device was full of pictures. In fact, nothing but pictures. Dozens of them. I opened the first one and clicked through them in order. The first few were just shots from around town, general places that I recognized. The fourth image was taken on our town's busiest street. In the image, the street was full of people. But there was somebody in it that caught my attention immediately. Me. The image showed me in amongst the crowd, just minding my own business. Well, this was a small town. Was it just a coincidence that I was in the picture? The fifth image had been taken on the same day. Again, it was taken in our town. Again, I was in it. The photographer was closer to me this time. Whoever had taken these pictures of me, I hadn't noticed them at the time. Next came several more pictures of me in various locations around town. Then, something more chilling. A photo of a house. My house. It was nighttime in the image, and the living room light was on. I clicked through to the next picture. It was another image of my house, this time taken even closer. Through the living room window, you could see me sitting on the couch, watching television. I could tell from the clothes I was wearing that it had been taken the night before. I had no idea that somebody had been outside watching me. I kept clicking through the images on the drive. Photo after photo of me inside my house, taken from just outside my window. Because it was so light inside and so dark outside, I was totally unable to see that somebody was watching me from out there. I couldn't see them, but they could see me, clear as day. Didn't even need to use the flash on their camera. after 20 or so photos of just me inside my house, there came a real curveball. An image taken from inside my hallway. The man, or woman, or whoever was taking these pictures of me, had been inside my house the night before. There were photos of my living room, now lightless and empty, obviously taken after I'd gone to sleep. Photos of my kitchen, of my dining area, my stairwell, and several taken as the unknown person ascended my stairs towards where I was sleeping. My brain started to run wild with thoughts about who had been following me. Had I wronged someone in the past? Said the wrong thing to the wrong guy? Was this just some weirdo who'd decided to target me? Were they armed when they came to pay me a visit? Whatever the case, somebody had come inside my house at night and taken pictures of all of the rooms, including my bedroom. The second to last photo was of me, fast asleep in my bed, totally oblivious to the person in my home. The final image was just of a handwritten note, framed in close-up. The message on it simply read, "Never hide a spare key under your doormat." I've since moved house.
This story happened a couple years ago when I was in my early teens. It all started when I went to the movies with my friend Sam to go see the world premiere of The Dark Knight. The movie garnered a lot of notoriety at the time, obviously due to Heath Ledger's leading role as the Joker. I personally thought it was the greatest movie I had ever seen, considering I've seen almost every Batman movie that ever existed. I decided to buy some Dark Knight merchandise at the vendor booth located in the theater. What appealed most was how cheap the Batman masks were selling for. I didn't have a Halloween costume picked out for October yet, and neither did my friend Sam. We both collectively purchased one mask each and figured it would make for an easy costume to trick-or-treat with. I can honestly say it was an astronomical improvement from the cliche bedsheet over the head ghost I was last year. Fast forward to October 31st. Me and Sam both wore our Batman masks and began going door to door, looking for an opportunity to fill our candy sacks faster than any other trick-or-treater on the block.
Trick-or-treat!
Well, happy Halloween, Batman. I mean, Batman. That's it? Lame.
Get the hell off my property, you ungrateful twerp!
The majority of the houses were pretty generous, with the exception of a few bad apples, to say the least. On this particular night, there wasn't many houses that had their lights on, which generally meant that they didn't really celebrate Halloween, or in other words, they weren't giving out candy. Me and Sam were understandably upset considering we'd been walking for at least an hour. I continued trick-or-treating while Sam began to head home through the pit located in the middle of the neighborhood.
Why didn't I just stay home and watch SpongeBob?
The pit was just a fancy nickname for the forest reserve, which was generally used for nature walks during the day. But me and Sam went there solely for the sake of a shortcut home. I began walking about half a block down when I see more houses without their lights on. Screw this, I'm going home. I eventually approached the pit while beating myself over the head for not leaving at the same time as Sam. As I entered the pit, I instantly had second thoughts of taking the longer route, as this route seemed nothing short of irresponsible and dangerous. I ultimately decided to man up and continue walking through the pit, as I didn't want to prolong my already dreadful night. Why the hell did I have to take this route? I can barely see anything. I knew I should have dressed up as a skateboarder. I would have been home already. I remember the pit being so dark to the point where I could virtually see nothing except for whatever my cell phone light was illuminating.
What the hell was that?
I began walking faster as I could hear faint sounds of what sounded like a maniac clown laughing.
What the hell? Who's there? Who's there?
At this point, I was so petrified I instinctively dropped my candy due to the adrenaline rush flowing through my body. I couldn't care less about the candy, as I genuinely felt like my life was in danger. That's when I saw the source of the laughter standing a few feet in front of me. It was a man dressed as the Joker from the Batman movie I saw previously. He honestly looked like an exact replica of Heath Ledger's with a hint of blood on his costume. What made this more disturbing was how casual his demeanor was. He just stood there smiling at me like my appearance was amusing to him. I didn't want to express the fear I felt internally, so I tried to playfully marvel at his costume and say, "Hey there, I really like your Joker costume." No matter how hard I tried to keep a composed poker face, my body language and mannerisms couldn't help but show the fear that bled inside of me. He then took a couple steps closer to me as I began to cautiously take a few steps backwards.
Hey man, what the hell do you want from me?
Why so serious? Happy Halloween.
The man surprisingly walks past me while I watch him in complete shock. What the hell was that? Was that some real-life Joker? At this point, I continued walking home while looking back every 2 seconds to make sure the man wasn't lurking behind me. I eventually make it home and watch a couple of YouTube videos, trying to forget the creepy encounter that just took place. That's when my dad pops into my room and asks me to answer the house phone.
Hey, Mark, answer the house phone.
Hello?
Hey, Mark, is Sam still with you?
That's when I felt my heart drop to my stomach. No, he left to go home way before I did.
Oh my god, why would you leave without him? He's not even home!
Sam's parents end up calling the police, which resulted in an entire block search party. What came of such an innocent Halloween night turned into a nightmare. Sam's remains were eventually found in the pit, with his face lacerated into an exaggerated smile, and his head decapitated from his body. I haven't trick-or-treated since, and I still live with the regret of not leaving at the same time as my friend. I informed law enforcement about the bizarre encounter with the man I saw that night. Call it speculation or whatever you want, but I know the death of my friend Sam had something to do with that sick man. Or, should I say, the Joker.
My God, why? Why did you take my son from me? My God! God, why? Why did you take my son from me?
Police are looking for any witnesses to come forward in the connection of the deadly homicide of the teen. The victim's remains were found at the local park observatory. The suspect is described to be approximately 6 feet tall, Caucasian, and was last seen wearing purple attire with a green vest and tie. Police say the suspect is described to have face paint imitating the Joker from the blockbuster hit The Dark Knight. If anyone has any tips, please contact your local law enforcement and you shall remain anonymous. All right, Karen, back to you.
Trick or treat!
Well, happy Halloween, Batman. I mean, Batman.
That's it? Lame.
Get the hell off my property, you ungrateful twerp!
So, this story happened to my mum's friend in Korea about 10 years ago. Every time I hear this story, I still get chills. My mum's friend lived in an apartment complex in Seoul. She was a stay-at-home mother with a young daughter, and her husband was working during the days. One day, she was coming home from running errands with her daughter and got onto the elevator in her building. When she got inside the elevator, she noticed there was a man wearing a cap and a yellow raincoat, and he kept his head low, so she couldn't really see his face. She immediately felt really uneasy, and she made her daughter stand by her side, the side farthest away from the man. What made her feel even more uncomfortable was, when she pressed the button for her floor, there was no other lit number. And on top of that, She noticed that he was carrying something wrapped inside newspaper close to his side. Things started to click in my mum's friend's head, and she started to panic and decided to take out her cell phone and pretend she was calling home to her husband, who was obviously really not at home, but at work. She started saying things like, "Oh, I'm on the elevator and about to get off. Can you get the door for me?" and making it seem like her husband was waiting at home. When the elevator did reach her floor, she quickly got off and grabbed her daughter and started to walk as fast as she could to her apartment. She noticed that the man also got off on her floor and was slowly following her down the hallway. When my mum's friend got to her door, she started banging on it really loudly and shouting, "Hey, Yobo, I'm home. Please open the door." Yobo means husband or dear. She was kind of pretending like he was coming to open the door. Upon seeing this, the man in the yellow raincoat started to walk away, back towards the elevator. When he seemed to be far enough away, my mum's friend quickly picked up her daughter and slid open her door's passcode thingy. This is usually how people get into their homes in Korea. And she started to frantically punch in her key code. But the problem was that the buttons would make sounds, so that the man knew that no one was going to answer the door for her, and he turned around and started to run back towards her. My mum's friend at this point was practically screaming, and the first thing she did when she opened the door was throw her daughter inside. When she got inside herself, she saw that the man was practically inches away from the door, but she managed to shut it and lock it just before he could wedge his hand or a weapon in through the door. Afterwards, looking through the door's peephole, she saw that the man was walking away, back towards the elevator. Several months pass, and my mum's friend was watching the news, and there was a coverage on the capture of a serial killer named Yoo Young-chul, who used to kill a lot of prostitutes. She told my mum that she could never forget the dread she felt when she saw the all-too-familiar yellow raincoat and the same hat that he was wearing when he was apprehended. The person who submitted this story has included a wiki page on Yoo Young-chul, in case anyone was curious. It also details all of his killings. A link to this page can be found in the description below.
I will never look at life the same way after what I experienced. It still bothers me just thinking about it. It happened a while ago when I was working as a cashier at Starbucks. I worked part-time as there was unfortunately not enough hours available, so moving out of my parents' house wasn't the easiest endeavor to accomplish. My parents always nagged at me for the latter part of the day, which always had me stressed out. They would always send subliminal jabs alluding to me moving out. I'll never forget the time my dad confronted me while I was doing laundry.
"Hey, Jason, can you ask for a raise at work?"
"I can't exactly do that, Dad. I'd probably get fired if I tried that."
"Well, can't you work somewhere else then? I'm gonna need your room soon, because I plan to make it Charlie's room."
Charlie was my baby brother.
"Well, can't Charlie stay in your room a little longer?"
"I said I'm gonna need your room, damn it!"
"Well, where the hell am I supposed to stay then?"
"Figure it out! You've had plenty of time now!"
I've always avoided going home right after work, especially after confrontations like that. I would much rather procrastinate at work after my shift was done, just to avoid the inevitable arguments that awaited me. Sounded like a better deal anyway. It'd been a few weeks since the tense clash with my dad. My life had been a little bit more bearable since I started going to this local karaoke bar located down the street from my workplace. I would make it a routine to go there after work just to instill a little more enthusiasm in my already dull life. I was a regular, so I knew all the employees on a first-name basis.
"What you drinking tonight, hot stuff?"
I'll get the usual, Sally.
Wait a minute. It's you again. Jason, right?
Yep, me again.
Good to see you again, Jason. One order coming right up.
Thanks, Sally. I really enjoyed coming here as it was the perfect place for guests to lounge with just a small admission fee. The bar always held live performances from various bands, so there was usually a decent-sized crowd always in attendance.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's the final performance of the night. Please give it up for the lovely Katie!
Falling for you, I can't keep away. Are you listening? I want you to stay.
Hey kid, doesn't she have the prettiest eyes you've ever seen?
Yeah, she's definitely a pretty gal. Katie had a lot of diehard fans that would show up to support her. She was really attractive, which made older men look like young teenage boys fanboying over her. I've had the privilege of chatting with Katie after her shows before, but this time I mustered up the courage to ask her out. Hey, Katie, it's me again.
Who are you?
Jason, we met on several occasions after your performances. I'm a big fan of your voice.
Thanks, Jason. I really appreciate it.
I think you're the best singer ever, and you're really gorgeous.
Thank you?
I was wondering if we could potentially exchange...
Oh, Jason, all you men are alike. I bet you just want to see what I look like without my clothes, right?
No. I mean, yeah. Katie nonchalantly takes my cell phone and begins punching in her contact information. Holy crap, this is actually happening. I must be dreaming.
Here you go, Jason. Hope to chat with you more.
Definitely, baby. Katie. As I was on my way home, I decided to be ballsy and give Katie a goodnight text. I then noticed she had given me a link to her OnlyFans page as opposed to her phone number. What the hell is this? Well, at least I might get to see some nudes. I've personally never used an OnlyFans before, but if there was going to be someone's account I was going to check out, it'd be Katie's. I eventually make it home and open up her page on my computer browser. A subscription of $10 a month? Netflix doesn't even charge that much. I unfortunately didn't have the funds to purchase such things, but my curiosity was what put the nail in the coffin. I took out my credit card and shamefully typed in the details on the site. I was now officially subscribed to Katie's OnlyFans account. I began scrolling around, seeing a lot of mature content throughout her page. I can honestly say it wasn't the most regretful decision I ever made, as I got to see a different side of Katie. Or should I say, a different side of my longtime crush. Oh yeah, this is what I'm talking about. Throughout the night, I continued to browse through more of Katie's content till it was time to head to bed. It'd been a couple of weeks since that whole ordeal occurred. I still worked as a cashier at Starbucks and made it a routine to go to the karaoke bar after work. Everything had pretty much been the same except I hadn't seen or heard about Katie since. I couldn't help but feel like I had some sort of role in Katie's sudden disappearance from the bar, so I decided to snoop around her OnlyFans once again. Later that night, I had Katie's OnlyFans open on my computer. The monthly subscription I had paid for previously was still in effect, so I could still view her content. There were 5 observations I accumulated right off the bat. The first observation was that her status said, active 5 minutes ago. I assumed she had lost interest in the singing gig and was pursuing the OnlyFans endeavor solely now. The second observation was that she began to wear sunglasses in all her recent photos. Interesting. The third observation was that her photos were being taken in an old wooden cellar, not the aesthetic bedroom that she once previously had. The fourth observation was that all her pre-existing content was deleted. Why the hell would she get rid of everything? The only thing left on Katie's page was 3 photos of her posing with sunglasses. The last observation was the one that struck me the most. I could tell her recent pictures were being taken by someone due to the shadow presented in the photos. Call me Sherlock Holmes if you will, but I had my suspicions that something just wasn't right. I decided to direct message Katie saying, "Hey, it's me, Jason, from the karaoke bar. I'm not sure if you remember me, but I wanted to know why don't you perform there anymore?" About 10 minutes go by and I get no reply. She probably gets 1,000 messages. I bet she'll reply to this, though. That's when I decided to bribe Katie by sending a convincing message saying, "Hey, if I tipped you $5, could you send me a video of yourself smiling on camera?" About a minute later, I surprisingly got a response from Katie showing a hidden video with an option of unlock for $5. I end up accepting the purchase only to see a video of Katie wearing sunglasses. She just stood in one spot, not saying anything. I then heard a male voice in the background saying,
"Smile for the camera, you vermin!"
Katie then involuntarily puts on this bizarre and unnatural smile, almost like she was a cartoon character from a Disney movie. I felt really disturbed from what I was witnessing. I decided to continue the game of charades and say, "If I give you $5 more, could you send me a video of yourself kissing the friend you're with?" About 5 minutes had passed and I got no reply. I honestly thought Katie was done with my pathetic games until I got another message of a hidden video with a $5 price tag on it. I hesitantly unlocked the video, only to see a disturbing clip of Katie saying,
"He's not my friend! Don't ever say he's my friend, because he's not. He's more than that to me. He's my everything. He's my one and only love."
"That's my good girl. Oh, yeah. The young boy wanted some kissing action. Let's make his money's worth, shall we?"
I felt sick to my stomach. I then realized that the gentleman's appearance stood out to me like I recognized him from somewhere. I couldn't exactly pinpoint where I knew him from, but he definitely looked familiar to me. The man then said,
"I bet you'd love to see Katie's beautiful eyes, wouldn't you?
Wouldn't you? Oh, I'm gonna make this your best $5 ever spent."
That's when the man removed the sunglasses from Katie's face, revealing her eye sockets with both eyeballs missing. That's when I exited my web browser and immediately turned off my computer. What the hell was that? That was wrong on so many levels. I decided to head to bed and call it a night, hoping to sleep off the nightmare I just witnessed firsthand. It's been a couple months since the incident had occurred. I haven't seen Katie's OnlyFans account since, as I assume she deleted it. Or should I say, that man in the video did. I haven't told anyone about this, and quite frankly, I don't know what to do. I still go to the karaoke bar with an optimistic attitude that one day I'll see Katie again.
"Falling for you, I can't keep away. Are you listening? I want you to stay. Before you go, I want you to know that I'm down, down." "Hey kid, doesn't she have the prettiest eyes you've ever seen? For you."
This all took place a couple of years back. I was walking my dog through a local park late one night and decided to take a little break on one of the park benches. I sat down and immediately felt something under my butt. It was a USB flash drive, which had either been forgotten or abandoned by somebody. I waited around for maybe 5 minutes to see if somebody would come back and claim it. Nobody did, so I just put it in my pocket. Like I said, it was late at night, so the park's lost and found area was closed. I planned to head back there in the morning before work and hand it over. Maybe the owner might come by and collect it. Probably a student who had some work assignments on it, I figured. As I sat at home, my curiosity got the better of me, and I decided to take a quick look at what was on the USB. I plugged it into my computer and checked its contents. Strange. There was only one file on the USB. An Excel file, of all things. Some poor schmuck must have lost this thing after its first use. The file was simply titled Little Black Book. Needless to say, I opened the document. It was just a large collection of names, addresses, and numbers. Mr. X, Tudor Hill Drive, 52,750. Mrs. Y, Springfield Avenue, 47,300. Dr. Z, Deacon Street, 52,200, etc. The list ran on and on, probably 40 or 50 names and addresses in total. At least 25 of them had been highlighted in red. The rest were just in black. Strange. Why would someone go through the trouble of making an Excel file with all this information in it, then saving it onto an empty USB as the only file? Were these someone's clients? Someone's friends? I had no idea. And what were the numbers next to each name supposed to mean? They were all in the same ballpark, between 30 and 60,000. And I decided to dig a little deeper and look up a few of the names and addresses, just to sate my curiosity, you know. I started with a couple of the names in black. It looked like these really were real people and their real addresses. Okay. Still didn't give any indication about what the numbers meant, though. I looked up one of the names in red. Mr. X. That's when things took a darker turn. Mr. X was indeed a real person, and the address listed was indeed his. But he had passed away a few years back under mysterious circumstances. The same was true of Mrs. Y, Dr. Z, and all the other names listed in red on the document. They'd all perished, either under mysterious circumstances or through some sort of unfortunate accident. Starting to worry that this USB might have belonged to someone in the cleanup business, so to speak, I began to put the pieces of the puzzle together and figured I knew what the numbers next to each name meant. They were the amount that the people had been contracted for. This was a hit list. I immediately called up the authorities and handed the USB over to them, telling them where I'd found it and what the information pertained to. They took it from there, and I haven't heard anything else about it since. Had somebody left the USB on the bench intentionally for somebody else to come and collect, or had it simply fallen out of the owner's pocket? I still don't know. Probably never will. But I'm glad that nobody came by that park bench during those 5 minutes I waited around. It was dark. The park was completely empty. And the owner or collector really wouldn't have wanted that USB to fall into somebody else's hands. Who knows what they might have done.
I've been holding on to this for a couple of years now, and feel like I need to get it off my chest. I had a few years to digest this, and now I'm ready to share my story with the world. I wish to remain anonymous, so for the sake of this story, my name will be Danny. The details of this story remain vivid, but somewhat foggy, as I try to reminisce on the distant memories that occurred a couple of years ago. It all started when me and my parents resided together in an old townhouse, which was located in a neighborhood notorious for having a high crime rate. I never liked living there, and neither did my parents, but it was the only thing that we could afford at the time. My parents were a little rough around the edges, considering they had both been through a lot in their younger years. My dad has had a few run-ins with the law, while my mom lost both her parents at a very young age, so seeing them edgy at times didn't faze me at all.
Well, I'm doing my best, all right?
Can you do something else? What you're doing isn't working.
I'd like to see you do better.
Well, do better, damn it!
Shut the hell up already. I'm tired of hearing you nag all day.
You shut up, you bum!
Almost every night, I could hear the constant back-and-forth bickering that occurred for hours on end between my parents. They would always fight over what I assumed to be financial-related issues, which had only gotten worse over the years. My parents both didn't really make much money on their respective jobs, so hearing them argue was almost a daily occurrence. I was always scared that things would turn violent, especially with the way these two went at it. I remember one night, I was in my bed trying to induce myself to sleep by watching a couple of YouTube videos on my cell phone. I could hear the usual shouting match coming from the kitchen downstairs. It honestly sounded like they were at the point where they were going to be in a physical altercation. I pressed my ear against my bedroom door and could hear the distant bickering become more hostile between my parents. I could make out my mom saying,
"If you don't get a real job, I'm taking Daddy and we're moving out."
What in the hell are you talking about? He doesn't even like you.
Shut up! Shut up! Shut the hell up!
I remember hearing sounds of my mom opening up the kitchen drawers, which led me to assume she was searching for something sharp and potentially do the unthinkable. That's when I decided to head downstairs and mediate the feud to hopefully put it to rest. As I approached the kitchen, I could see my mom holding a huge knife in an overhand grip, the kind of grip that someone uses in preparation of stabbing someone. I could also see my dad holding one of the dining room chairs, in which I assumed was his defense mechanism.
What are you doing here, Danny? Didn't I tell you never to leave your room unless you have to use the washroom?
I'm sorry, Mom, but I heard you and...
Go to your room, you little turd!
Don't call him that!
Don't tell me what to do, you mother...
Mom, please don't kill Dad!
I said go to your room, Danny!
Leave Danny alone and put the knife away, Helen! That's when my mom began piercing the family portrait of us. Except she was only piercing the portion with my dad's face. Mom, stop! Please stop it! It's been a couple weeks after the whole saga had occurred. My parents ended up getting a divorce, which unfortunately left me to reside with my mother. The court unfortunately ruled that my mom would be in favor of getting custody of me due to my dad's criminal history with the law. I honestly contemplated on running away due to how much I dreaded living with her, especially with how toxic and controlling her behavior was. I would spend most of my time locked in my bedroom, sulking on why I couldn't live a normal life like the rest of the younger individuals in my neighborhood. Why in the hell do I have to live with her? Why couldn't I just live with Dad? He was always the better parent. I can't stand her. I wish she were dead. What made this even worse was the fact that I had a curfew during my school days. I didn't even have time to join any after-school clubs or sports teams due to the simple fact that I was too worried about not making it home on time. I remember my mom locked me out of the house for several hours due to the fact that I was 5 minutes past my curfew. The one thing I found even more aggravating was how my mom permanently banned me from going to the local Chuck E. Cheese restaurant located down the street from my residence. For those that aren't familiar with Chuck E. Cheese, it's a restaurant that has arcade games and playrooms for younger crowds such as myself. I enjoyed going there, as it would bring back fond memories of when me and my dad used to go. I usually went to Chuck E. Cheese every time it was my birthday, just as a tradition my dad established when we all used to live together. But all of that is gone now. My mom took my entire childhood away from me, which I find equivalent to ripping my heart out of my chest. She selfishly didn't want me going because she didn't want me to be reminded of my dad's existence. The rules and restrictions I had to abide by really made it difficult to make any friends, which put me in a dark state of mind for the latter part of my life. There was one night where I decided to approach my mom and convince her to bring me to Chuck E. Cheese for my upcoming birthday. I honestly cared more about Chuck E. Cheese than my actual birthday itself, which is why I ended up using it as an excuse to go there. Hey, Mom, can we please go to Chuck E. Cheese for my...
No, Danny, I already told you this.
But it's for my birthday.
No.
I anticipated the rebuttal my mom was going to throw at me, but that didn't stop me from being persistent with my request. After a few tears and relentless pleading, my mom eventually caved in and agreed to take me there on my birthday. The exhilaration of going to Chuck E. Cheese after all these months was honestly something I would compare to an inmate getting released from jail. I felt so excited, to the point where I didn't even care about anything else. Just me and the place that I once grew to love. My birthday eventually arrived, and it was time for me to finally visit Chuck E. Cheese once again. It was about the evening time, so the venue was usually packed to full capacity. I couldn't help but marvel at what was in front of me, as I genuinely felt I was a kid in a candy shop. Pinch me. I must be dreaming. I immediately started playing the arcade games while my mom wandered off to grab some food. I remember being so hungry, but at the same time so infatuated with every arcade game that was in front of me. I couldn't help but indulge in countless games, as I knew this could be my very last time at Chuck E. Cheese. That's when I felt a strange tap on my shoulder. I turned towards the direction of where I felt the tap, only to see a large Chuck E. Cheese rat mascot hovering over me. I was a little alarmed that the mascot would approach me, considering there were hundreds of guests in attendance. Hey, Chucky? The mascot didn't say anything. He just stood there staring at me with his big elongated eyes. I noticed he had red stains on his costume, which I assumed to be pizza stains. But then I noticed the stains had transferred onto the shoulder area of my shirt from the tap he did earlier. I now knew that these were definitely not pizza stains. They had to be blood stains of some sort. Chucky, is she gone? Yeah, she is. Here. Take my hand, Danny.
I missed you, Dad.
I miss you too, son.
When I was a little girl, maybe around 11 years old, a cult tried to recruit me and my friends through the dark web. This was in 2012. We lived in a gated community, but somehow this church named Assembly of Prayer Christian Church would have its members walking around trying to get everyone to attend their church. My friends and I would go to the local pool for our neighborhood, and these people were taking pictures of everyone, including parents, lifeguards, and us. We looked up their Facebook, but none of the pictures would be there. They only showed the outside of their building. Then a rumor started to circulate that these pictures were on the deep web. I didn't believe it until all of my friends and I went over our friend Greg's house. Greg went on a regular browser, but somehow got on the deep web. I didn't know much about it, so I just watched. We looked up Assembly of Prayer Christian Church, and some Facebook popped up again. We went to it, but we can see more photos than we could before. It was like we had more access than before, but still didn't see much. Just inside the chapel. That's when Greg mentioned that the rest of the photos might be on the dark web. I only knew about the deep web, but they sounded like the same thing. That's when he went on a browser. It wasn't Tor, it was some other browser that I can't remember the name of. He made a call and asked someone on the phone where and how to search what he was looking for. We interrupted him, telling him that he needs to just put the church name in again. He said it's not that easy. When he got off the phone, he searched Free the Dolphins from Yellow Cowboy. Then the Facebook page popped up, but we had complete access, not as an admin, but as if we were a friend or we were following the page. Then we saw the pictures. But what was creepy is that every single picture had a name of the person, or multiple names if it were more than one person. We then saw our pictures. There were a picture with about 8 of us in it walking to the pool with a link under it. Greg clicked on it. We entered a live video. We were looking at the inside of the chapel with a man standing on a podium. He said, "Welcome, number 77. In the top right-hand corner of our screen was 77. We were number 77. Greg typed hi. Then the man on the stage said that he was called Chief, so just type Chief if we need him. Greg typed okay. Chief then said that he would continue. He picked up a picture. It was one of my friends. He held it in front of the camera, then everyone in the chat put numbers. I saw a lot of numbers between 1 and 5. A few were higher than 5. Greg looked at us confused. Then Chief looked at the camera and said, "Number 77, we're waiting for you." I believe he typed 3. I can't really remember. For the next hour or so, this man that was called Chief had put all of our pictures in front of the camera, and we were rated between 1 and 10. By coincidence, I had the highest rating. Out of nowhere, the stream ended, and we were back on the Facebook page with all of our pictures. But all of our pictures disappeared. Being that this is all we got on for, we got off, and all of us went home. The next couple of days seemed weird. The church people disappeared. No one was asking us to join anymore. One day, everything became even more strange. One of my friends were over my house while my parents were at work. We're on Facebook watching YouTube. We both paused and looked at each other. I looked outside the window and one of the people from the church was just standing there. I looked back at my friend and she pointed at the front door. I looked out the peephole and another guy was standing there. We looked out the back window and there were literally 20 people standing in a formation. So I called the police like any other person would. And of course, these people were long gone by the time the police arrived. The police said that they will keep the report on file. They tried looking at the security cameras throughout the neighborhood, but nothing was showing these people, and there were time gaps within the footage. It's been a while since this incident, but I will never forget what happened when I went on the dark web. I'm 31 years old. I have a son named Luke who's 7 years old. And I usually look after his friend, Charlie, who's 7 also. Charlie's father is a friend of mine and has to work a lot. So I look after Charlie most evenings. This one Friday evening, I took Luke and Charlie to a park to kick the football around. At one point, I kicked the ball a little too hard, and it went down the field near some trees and bushes. Charlie ran over to get the ball, when suddenly a man came out of the trees and picked Charlie up. Then he started to run off into the nearby forest. I instantly ran after him, screaming for help. I ran into the forest and lost sight of Charlie and the man. I shouted, "Hey, Charlie." A few seconds went by, and by then I heard a cry for help. I ran into the direction of where the noise came from. I ran, but I couldn't see them. I was really starting to panic, thinking the very worst. I then noticed something on the ground. It was one of Charlie's Adidas shoes. I picked it up and carried on running while shouting for Charlie. I saw him. He was laying on the ground crying. I picked him up and asked him if he was hurt. He said no. I think he was crying from the shock of what just happened. I'm guessing Charlie was really slowing him down. He didn't think he would be able to get away, so he decided to drop him and give up. As I was about to head back to the park, I saw the man in the distance of the trees looking at us. And then he turned and ran off. I told the police of what I saw, but I couldn't give a description of the man, as I didn't really get a close look enough at him. I'm not sure of what Charlie told the police, but I don't think it was much information, as I think everything happened too fast for him to see the man and to give a detailed description. My son Luke, however, told me something later that night that honestly scared the crap out of me. He said he's seen that man before. He sees him every day near the school and at the park when they play football. I have a bad feeling that this won't be the last we see of this sick man. I'm an office manager, and being the manager of a company has its perks sometimes. But it also means I have to be the one to let people go. In this one instance, I had to fire a man named Hooper. What made it awkward was he was dating my best friend, Olivia. She had asked me to give Hooper a job. As she's my friend, I gave him a 4-month trial basis. I won't go into detail too much about why I needed to fire him, but it was basically, he just didn't know how to do his job. I had to let Olivia know the day before I was about to let Hooper go. She was understanding and thankful I gave him a chance. That following morning, I called Hooper in my office and told him that we were letting him go. He didn't really say much, but the expression on his face was surprised but also a little mad, which is understandable as he had just got fired from a job. But he left the office, and I carried on with my day as usual. Later that evening, I got in my car, but before starting it, I received a Zoom call from my bosses. I will skip most of the conversation because it's private and irrelevant. At one point, one of my bosses said, "Courtney, please tell me you have finally fired Hooper." I replied saying, "Yes, I have." Then my boss said, "Thank God, he was useless," and letting out a laugh with some of the other bosses. Later that night, I was in bed asleep, and I woke up to what I initially thought was my phone ringing. But after listening more carefully, I realized it wasn't a phone call. It was a recording of some kind. I kept hearing it on repeat. Thank God he was useless. Thank God he was useless. Thank God he was useless. With laughing in the background over and over, it was the Zoom conversation I had with me and my bosses earlier that night. I looked around my room and there was an old tape recorder sitting on my cabinet. Someone had broken into my house and put that there. I went downstairs and saw the front door was open. Of course, the first thing I did was call the cops, and I told them I suspected it was Hooper who had put the recording there. What's creepy was, no one had seen him again, not even Olivia. She said that he just vanished and stopped responding to her calls and texts. People lose their jobs every day, but it's scary to think how people will react. I don't understand what Hooper's intentions were with recording, and quite frankly, I don't think I want to know.
A few years ago, more like 10 years ago, I used to be big into visiting weird websites. I had a lot of time on my hand, due to not playing sports, nor did I volunteer for anything at all in high school. I told my friend Mark that I was starting to get bored. Honestly, I was bored with what I was experiencing on these websites. He said I should go on the deep web. He and I used to go on the deep web, but never found anything. So I decided to search through some more stuff, a little deeper. I searched for hours every day for about 2.5 months. Still nothing that I hadn't seen already. I told Mark, and of course he said, just visit the dark web. When I did go on the dark web, I saw chat rooms, all with different names. I came across one named I, as in E-Y-E. It was all in caps. I entered the chat, but before entering the live chat, you are assigned a number. Mine was P34. I confirmed my number and entered. There were hundreds of people. The comments were coming in quick. At first, I didn't understand what was going on. The screen was black, then a name popped up on the screen that said Mr. Wiggles. The comments immediately stopped and a voice came over my speakers. Welcome, P34. Then his name disappeared off of the screen and the comments continued, everyone giving me welcomes. A few minutes go by, then a countdown from 10 pops up on the screen, then the chat goes crazy. Once it reached the number 1, the screen went straight to what looks like a view from a camera just watching someone in what looks like their home. I sat there watching this for 20 minutes and nothing happened, so I shut down my computer. The next day I went to school, had a normal day, went to Walmart, then I went home. I decided to go back on the same chat from before. I confirmed my number P34 and again, there were hundreds of people commenting. Mr. Wiggles popped up and just like before, the comments stopped. Across the screen it said, no new members tonight. Then the countdown started again. Everyone in the chat started going wild. The countdown finished and then it was showing the point of view from a camera again. But it was outside of a school. My school from earlier that day. At that point, I was intrigued. I couldn't tell if it was focused on a certain person or just watching the school. After 30 minutes of watching the video, our school bell rang and everyone started to come outside while whoever was recording was positioned across the street in the car. Once everyone came out, the person got out of the car and started to follow a crowd of kids. Everyone started to split from each other and the person recording started to follow someone. It was my friend Mark. He had to be at least 100 feet behind him. I started to call Mark, but he didn't answer. I kept calling him as I watched the video, but nothing. The person followed him to his house and sat outside of his house for a few minutes. The man behind the camera finally said, "No parents are home." And he began to walk to Mark's house, rang the doorbell, and waited as he continued to record. A few seconds go by, and Mark opened the door. He looked confused and the guy said, "P34 sent me." And Mark looked afraid, then the camera shut off and everyone in the chat left. So I did too. I called Mark's house phone instead of his cell phone, and his mother answered. I asked for Mark and she said that she thought he was with me. I panicked. I then received a notification on my phone from my Gmail account. It said the sender was Mr. Wiggles. The message was, "I'm getting closer, P34. Mark says hi." I was shocked and didn't know what to do, so I called the cops. They didn't do anything about it because the email disappeared. I haven't been on the dark web since and no one has seen Mark. Still to this day, I receive messages with pictures of me in random places, along with the same written message that said, "It can happen anytime." I honestly wish I never went on the dark web.
You can call me Derek in this story. I'm 23 years old and have recently landed myself an intern job working in the office of the city that I moved to. It hasn't been as good as I thought it would be. My boss and other managers always drop extra work on me, and I usually end up staying in the office way later than everyone else when everyone else has already gone home. This one Thursday was no different. I was stuck in the office past 11 p.m. and was on a Zoom business call with people who were across the country and some were across the world. There weren't many people on the Zoom call. It was about 4 people, not including myself. I looked up from my desk and I took a look at the Zoom call. 3 of the 4 people were guys I knew. They were from the same company across town. The other caller I didn't know, but on the Zoom call, you can get dozens of people on the call at once. I don't always know everyone, so I didn't think much about it. The 4th person I didn't recognize was in an office that was dark, but there was no doubt that there was someone on the call. I could see them sitting down in a dingy office, but I couldn't make out any features whatsoever. One of my coworkers left the call, and then I asked the remaining 2 who the other person was. They both said it was probably someone. I won't say the name, obviously, but they had just gone to make coffee or something. The 2 co-workers then signed off, and it was just me and the other person on the call. As my co-workers said, they probably just went to make coffee. So I got my head down, and I carried on with my work. After about 10 minutes, I got up to use the bathroom, and I got myself a coffee. As I was pouring myself a mug, I heard something tip over on one of the nearby offices. It sounded like a stack of paper falling. I called out, "Hello?" I was startled, yeah, but I wasn't completely terrified. I assumed I was there alone, but this is a massive office building. There are plenty of people who could be here working late. When I got back to my desk, I took a look at the Zoom call. That's when I got freaked out. The one person who was still on the call had stuck a piece of paper on his computer camera and said hello with 3 dots next to it. I typed in the chat box, "Who's the person on the call?" Unsurprisingly, there was no response, and then the Zoom call ended. I was pretty scared and felt like going home and just taking my work with me. As I was packing up my stuff, I received a phone call. I answered it and said hello. There was no answer, but there was definitely someone on the line. I could just tell by the noises, and I could hear light breathing as well. I spoke again, saying, hello, who's this? That's when the phone went dead. I put the phone down and sped walk to the elevator. Once stepping inside the elevator and pressing the bottom floor button, a light turned on in an office down the corridor, and I heard a door slam shut. Right before the elevator closed, this all happened. That was the last weird thing that happened to me that night. It was the creepiest experience I've ever had. Unfortunately, I still have to stay late, and I'm always paranoid of who's around me, and I never feel alone when working late there. My name is Chloe, and this story happened to me 2 weeks ago. I'm 32 years old and have a 10-year-old son named Jesse. Every now and then, the company I work for requires me to travel across the state and other parts of the country to take place in important business meetings that are mandatory for me to attend. Thankfully, my bosses are understanding of the situation. Jesse's father isn't in the picture, so my work allows me to bring Jesse with me on business trips. Most of the time, we stay in a rented lodge or an apartment. A few weeks ago, I had to go on another business trip. It was out in the country, which was nice because the house me and Jesse would be staying in was a real small lodge, which was very secluded. The night before the meeting, I was on a Zoom call with my colleagues at around 10 p.m., while Jesse was upstairs playing on his Nintendo Switch. During my Zoom call, Jesse called me from upstairs telling me I need to see something. I excused myself from the call and headed upstairs. I went into his room and asked him what was wrong. He told me there was a man outside looking up into his window. I looked out into the dark field and couldn't see anything. I told Jesse I couldn't see anybody out there. He said the man walked off into the darkness as he called for me. What he said concerned me, but I had to brush it off as maybe it was a dog walker or something. I usually think rationally when it comes to things like that. I told Jesse to tell me if he sees the man again. I then returned to my Zoom call. About an hour went by when one of my bosses suggested we took a quick bathroom and drink break. Leaving the Zoom call on as we usually do, I went to put a pot of tea on and went upstairs to check how Jesse was. I asked if he was okay and if he saw anything outside. He told me he hadn't seen anybody since. I tucked Jesse into bed and went back downstairs to continue my business call on Zoom. Most of the colleagues were back on from the break, apart from a couple. One of my bosses said, oh, that's strange. I thought I just saw you walking around the kitchen. The laptop that I was using for the call was set on the table in the living room, which was opposite the kitchen, which also had a back door. I replied saying, no, I was just upstairs. He said he was certain that he saw me walking around the kitchen. I laughed and I told him he was seeing things. My pot of tea started to boil. I had forgot about it. As I walked into the kitchen, I noticed the back door was slightly open. I thought it was odd, especially being what my boss just said to me. But I chalked it up to Jesse forgetting to close the door. He was outside playing earlier that day, after all. I closed it and locked the door, poured myself some tea, and sat down and continued my Zoom call. About 10 minutes go by, and I started to feel funny, like really sleepy all of a sudden. But it wasn't a normal feeling. I felt fine, and all of a sudden, I felt like I couldn't keep my eyes open. And that's what happened. I fell asleep on a Zoom call. I didn't know at the time, but I was out for about 10 minutes until I woke up to Jesse frantically pulling me, trying to wake me up. He told me there was a man outside trying to get in. I turned around. I saw a man on the other side of the back door pulling the door handle in an aggressive way. He looked furious as he couldn't get inside. This means that what my boss said to me earlier when he thought he saw me in the kitchen was true. That man did get in the house as I was upstairs checking on Jesse. He must have spiked my tea, and that's what made me fall unconscious. Once unconscious, I think he was planning to enter the house and assuming the door was still unlocked to take my son away. The thought of this makes me sick to my stomach. I thank God that I noticed the door slightly open and locked it shut. This story could have had an awful ending otherwise. We called the police and they searched the area, and not surprisingly, they found no one. Jesse and I returned home after that. This incident will haunt me for the rest of my life, and Jesse's too.
My name is Stan. I'm 17 years old, and this story happened about 4 years ago. The school I went to was in a very rural area in my village. My friend Peter went to the same school, but I lived further away. His mom would always drop him off near my house, and we would always walk to school together. On our way to school, we would always pass some farms, and one of them had this really old, creepy house that was abandoned for years. One day, me and Peter said we should check it out and see what's in there, basically. We couldn't go after school because, like I said, Peter lived further away, and his mom needed to get him home. This was also during the winter, so it got dark sooner. So myself and Peter, we came up with the plan that Peter would have a sleepover around my house. And when my parents were asleep, we would sneak out and explore the abandoned farmhouse. It was Friday, and the past few days have been snowing. After school, Peter came to my house. We spent the evening playing video games and looking up creepy videos on the internet, anxiously waiting to sneak out. 1 a.m. rolled around, and we put our coats on and snuck out my bedroom window, which is ground level. We had one flashlight between the both of us, which Peter managed to sneak out of his dad's garage. We walked through the farm fields and made it to the house. Naturally, the first thing we did was try to open the front door, but it was locked. We looked around at a few of the windows, and one of them was smashed open. So we used this as our entrance. Surprisingly, the place seemed rather untouched for how long it had been rumored to be abandoned. It was just covered in dust and had a really strong smell. Not bad necessarily, but it did smell odd. I shined my flashlight to the top of the stairs. I couldn't see anything, but it seemed really eerie up there. And then I heard wood creaking. It kind of sounded like slow footsteps, but I wasn't certain. Peter then said, "We should check upstairs." I told him I'm not going up there. There's probably some maniac up there waiting to kill us. The next thing that happened was the phone rang. One of those really old phones made myself and Peter jump out of our skin. At that time, I didn't think about it, but I thought it was weird of how someone was calling this house and it was abandoned. I picked it up, and I said in a nervous voice, "Hello?" For a second there wasn't any response. And then a man spoke on the other end saying, "I'm not a maniac. Why don't you come upstairs and see for yourself?" At that point, loud, heavy footsteps ran across the upstairs room and toward the top of the stairs. Peter and I ran out the farmhouse as fast as we could. We ran out down to the farm. I glanced back to see if there was someone chasing us, but there wasn't. So I told Peter to slow down so we could catch our breath for a second. After taking a better look at the house, one of the upstairs lights was on, and there was a dark figure standing at the window, watching us. I didn't know what to think, and honestly, I was terrified. The light then turned out, and the both of us made our way back to my house. We managed to sneak back inside without making my parents wake up. Peter didn't say much. I think he was too creeped out as to what just happened. And to be honest, I didn't feel like talking either. I was actually quite paranoid that, I don't know, that guy was going to follow us to my house. Thankfully, at least to what I know of, we weren't followed. From that night on, every time me and Peter walk to school, we look at that creepy farmhouse. We can't help but feel someone's looking back at us. My name is Harry, and this happened about 9 years ago when I was 10 years old. Growing up, it was just me, my brother, and my mom. We didn't have a lot of money, and we moved around a lot, most of the time in rough neighborhoods. We moved into an apartment building when I was about 10 years old. It didn't take us long to get settled in. My mom gave my brother and me a task to help out. My brother would go out and get groceries and work side jobs if he could, and my task was to do the laundry. One day I went down to the first floor with a basket full of laundry. I walked into the laundromat and started putting clothes into the machine. That's when a man walked in with a laundry basket of his own. He was about in his early 40s. Light bright hair that was slicked back and big 70s-style glasses. He didn't say anything, but every now and then, I would look across the laundromat and would see him staring at me. I tried not to look, but I couldn't help but check, especially when, you know, you're being watched. After some time, the man left the laundromat, which left me feeling relieved. Later that day, after finishing laundry, I was heading outside with my brother and a new friend to play baseball. Before exiting the building, I looked to my left down the corridor to the laundromat, and I saw that same man from earlier. He was peering around the corner, looking into the laundromat. What was he doing, I thought. Was he actually looking for me? He was being very sneaky. I left the building before he had a chance to turn around and see me. About 3 or 4 days passed before I needed to do laundry again. The first thing I saw when I walked into the laundromat was that man. This time he spoke and said, "Hey, I didn't know you liked baseball," while giving me an unsettling smile. How did he know I liked baseball, I thought. Has he been watching me, following me? I said, "Oh yeah," while letting out an awkward fake laugh. I walked past the man and towards the washing machine. The man didn't say anything. Instead, he just stood there watching me again, still with a weird smile. Thankfully though, he left shortly after I was able to continue doing my laundry. One evening I was bored and I think there was some electrical problem in our apartment. Because of that, I wasn't able to play video games or watch TV. So I decided to do something productive and do some laundry. I went down to the laundromat and began doing the load. That's when the lights started flickering. And at the same time, the man came into the laundromat. As soon as I saw him, I felt faint. He walked slowly up to me, looking up at the lights flickering and said, "I think there's going to be a power outage." I looked up at the lights as well and said nervously, "Yeah, I think so too." I looked at the man, and he just gave me a creepy grin, just like before. At that point, the power did cut off, and the laundromat, along with the rest of the building, went dark. I was stuck in the dark laundromat along with this man. He then grabbed both of my arms really tight and pulled me close to him, and he said to me, "It's okay. You don't have to be afraid. It's only the dark. It's fine." Before I could say anything to tell him to let me go, he covered my mouth with his hand, then whispered to me saying, "Shh, it's okay, don't worry." I remember thinking at that point I was about to die, thinking that that man was about to take me away. And it was pitch black in the building after all, and the exit to the building was just down the corridor. The lights then flickered back on, and the man said to me, "See, I said everything's gonna be okay," then letting me go from his tight grip. I remember standing there, frightened, a man walking past me, and he left the laundromat. I never saw that man again after that, so I never mentioned it again. I sometimes think if the lights didn't come back on, would he have tried to take me away, or worse? This story happened to me about a month ago. The apartment that I live in isn't in a good area, but I haven't got that much money, and it's all I can afford currently. Thankfully, I have a washing machine in my apartment, and I don't have to go to the laundromat. Unfortunately, my washing machine broke. It was on a Saturday evening, and after calling a repairman to look at it, he told me he couldn't fix it until Monday, as he didn't have the time or equipment that evening, and the next day would be Sunday. So I had to do my laundry in a nearby laundromat, which was in a neighborhood that I try my best to avoid. I would be out all day Sunday, so I had no choice but to go to the laundromat that same Saturday evening. Going to the laundromat in a neighborhood I don't go to, especially at night, was quite unsettling. I walked to the laundromat and saw it to be empty. I didn't know if it was a good thing or a bad thing. I guess good, as there was no one around to bother me. I sat down on the bench scrolling through my phone as my laundry was in the washing machine. I still didn't see anyone outside or inside. And I didn't see the owner behind the counter either. I then started to hear some kind of scuffling in the back room behind the counter and a loud thud. The door was slightly open, but I couldn't see anything. I was about to get up and leave because I thought something bad was happening,
like a robbery taking place, and I didn't want to get caught up in that. But before I got up, a man opened the back room door, and he looked at me and turned away. He came out less than a minute later, this time wearing a different shirt than before. He must have been the owner or something. I remember thinking that. He gave me a friendly wave and a smile and stood at the back of the counter. Some time later, he went into the back room and I didn't see him again. My laundry was done and I went home. The next morning, I couldn't believe what I saw on the news. The owner of the laundromat I was at the previous night was found dead in a pool of blood early that morning. In the picture of the owner wasn't the man that I saw the previous night behind the counter. It was rumored that the owner was in some kind of money trouble and didn't have the money to pay what he owed. It's scary to think that a murder took place in the room next to me and I had no idea about it, and a suspected murderer came out and waved to me as if nothing was going on. I told police what I saw, and as far as I know, the suspect hasn't been found. My name is John and I'm 35 years old. I'm a security guard and have been for a while now. About a year ago, I got a job working night shifts at a small hotel. My job will be sitting at a desk watching a computer monitor, which is connected to a few cameras located around the hotel. And every hour or so, I would get up and patrol the area. This one night, I was sitting at my desk scrolling through my phone when I took a quick glance at the monitor and saw there was someone in the laundromat, which was located in the basement. There shouldn't be anyone down there at the time. I remember thinking that, which was past 2 a.m. I should mention that the camera quality wasn't the best, but it was good enough to see when something is going on. So I went down to the basement, turned my flashlight on, and spoke out. Is anyone down there? You need to leave right now. I tried to sound confident when I said that, but I'm not sure if it came out that way. Going down into a dark laundromat basement in the middle of the night is pretty creepy, especially when you saw someone in there. And what's more creepy was, no one replied, and there was no one down there. I went back upstairs to my desk. As I mentioned earlier, the camera quality wasn't the greatest, so I brushed it off to being a glitch in the footage or something. I continued looking at my phone, but this time, more cautious to the monitor. It wasn't long before I noticed something on the screen again. It was in the laundromat. I looked closely and I was certain I saw something. I could see someone pacing back and forth. Once again, I went down to the basement and into the laundromat to check, shining my light and asking who was down there. There was no reply. I couldn't see anyone in there. The laundromat wasn't that big, so I could clearly see if someone was in there, and it was empty. I was so confused and at the same time frightened. How can I see someone on the camera, but the room was clearly empty? Just as I was heading back upstairs, I heard a bang. Then a continuous banging. I shone my flashlight into the laundromat and I saw one of the washing machine doors was swinging open and shut by itself, slamming into the machine each time. I slowly walked up to the swinging door and put my hand in front of it, and it stopped. As soon as I stopped the door from swinging, I heard a whisper in my ear, and something grabbed my shoulder. I jumped and turned around, seeing nothing but an empty laundromat. I ran upstairs and out of the basement, back to my desk. I looked at the monitors again, and this time, there was nothing on the screen, except you could see that the washing machine door opened and closed by itself. I rewound the footage back to see if I could see something that I may have missed. The only thing that I could see, though, was me walk up to the washing machine door, stopping it, and me getting frightened and running out of the laundromat. I could make out one word from the whispering I heard in my ear, and that was leave. The next night, I struggled to get through the night shift. I kept watching the monitors expecting something to happen, especially in that laundromat, but I never did. I was too scared to work there after that, and the following day, I told my boss that I was leaving. I'm not a superstitious man at all, but I honestly believe that what I experienced was 100% supernatural.
Gordon. I'm 22 years old, but this story happened when I was 10, and it takes place in Florida. Me, my 6-year-old brother, and parents were on our way to Disney World for the weekend. It was our first time driving there, and we got a bit lost. We had to leave in the afternoon, and it was quite a long drive from where we lived. And like I said, we got a bit lost. It was dark outside, and we had to drive through the country lanes, but it wasn't just dark. It was basically pitch black because there were no street lamps whatsoever. The country roads we were driving through were quite creepy. I know me and my brother were freaked out. And to be honest, I think my parents were too. We had been driving for a while and I had to pee very bad. I know we could pull over, but I really didn't want to because it was scary as hell out there. But unfortunately, I couldn't hold it anymore, so I asked my dad to pull over. I got outside and I walked over to some nearby bushes, which led into a forest. It was pretty cold outside and I was shivering. Like I said, it was pitch black, but I could see a little bit because our car's headlights were on. I went to do my business when I heard a branch snap. I looked up and towards the woods and I saw some kind of light. It was a lantern. I looked closer and it was floating up, and then I saw it wasn't floating. Someone was picking it up, and the lantern light revealed a face I will never forget. It was a man who looked to be in his late 40s. He had a gray beard, and he was smiling with his eyes wide open. He had crooked yellow teeth. I stood there in shock with tears in my eyes. He then motioned with his finger for me to come toward him. I pulled up my pants and ran back to my car. My mom said to me, "Are you okay, sweetie?" I just smiled and said, "Yeah." And we continued driving. I didn't say anything to anyone about what I saw. And I still had to pee, but what was on my mind was that man I just saw. We finally arrived and I was able to use the bathroom. Me and my brother were and still are close. So that night while we were laying in our beds, I told him what I saw. And to my surprise, he didn't seem that freaked out when I told him. He looked down with a worried look on his face. Then he told me something. Something he saw in the car while we were pulled over. He was looking outside of his window, which were farm fields. He said he saw what looked to be a family of four standing in the middle of a field, who were also holding lanterns. He then asked our mom, "Who were those people?" And her response was, "What people? There's no one out there." And at that point, that's when I got back in the car. That night, and many nights after, me and my brother have discussed. We discussed what we saw, and we didn't know if it was real or not, or our imagination. I personally still believe to this day what I saw was real. This story still haunts me and gives me chills every time I think of it. What do you think?
If you enjoyed this video, press the like button and subscribe. It really helps my channel grow. Here are a few more videos you might like.
My name is Nicky and I'm 19 years old. This past December, I got myself a Christmas temp job working at Amazon, helping with deliveries. It gets pretty busy around that time for deliveries, obviously, because it's Christmas. Right away, I hated the guy I was helping with deliveries. His name was Frank. To describe him, he was a bit overweight, didn't shave well, and his hair was short. I didn't like him because he was very rude and seemed like he was in a bad mood all the time. And I would be in the van with him most of the time making deliveries, and it was very awkward. I tried to make conversation with him, but like I said, he was very rude, and there was no point in trying after about 2 times. I thought about quitting, to be honest, or at least be with a different delivery driver, but I didn't want to cause any trouble. I was a temp after all and needed this job. I thought Frank was really rude and socially awkward and not a nice person to be around, but I never thought he would harm me in any way. One evening after finishing delivery, we were driving back to Amazon warehouse, or at least that's where I thought we were going. Frank passed the turn where we always go to the warehouse. As I said before,
He didn't really speak, so I wasn't about to question him. He would probably snap at me anyway. After he continued driving, the more obvious it was to me he was taking me to another place, and it wasn't the warehouse. I finally asked Frank where we were going. He didn't snap at me, surprisingly. He just said we needed to run and do a quick errand. I was looking around my surroundings, and I could see that we were around empty fields and abandoned farmhouses. At this point, it was getting dark outside. Frank then pulled up next to the tall, overgrown, and unkempt cornfield. He said to me in a very firm voice to stay exactly where I was. Don't move. Frank then got out of the car and started walking up into the dirt road, disappearing into the dark of night. 10 minutes went by. I sat in the van by myself in the dark and had no idea where I was. My phone was in the warehouse in the locker, as we weren't allowed to have our phones during work hours, so I couldn't even go on my phone or use it as a light source. I needed to pee and couldn't hold it any longer, so I got out of the van and headed into the cornfield to do my business. After doing so, I started to walk back towards the van. In the near distance of the cornfield, I could see flashlights, two in fact. I found that really odd, as the whole area seemed to be abandoned. As I got closer to the van, I could hear a sort of heated argument going on between Frank and another man whose voice I couldn't recognize. I couldn't see him either. I heard the other man say, "Where is she? You said she was in the van." Frank then told the man that she was just in there, and she has to be around here somewhere. The other man said to Frank, "If we don't find her, you're a dead man." That's what those flashlights were. Those men were already out in the cornfield searching for me. I snuck off into the field, walking quickly but as quietly as I could, the whole time crying and thinking I was about to die. After walking far enough, eventually leaving the cornfield, I ran down the side of a long dirt road. I have no idea for how long, but eventually I came across an old diner which was still open, thank God. And the manager called the police for me. After this incident, I quit my job, but this wasn't the end of it. About 2 weeks after quitting my job, I got a call from my boss who employed me. He told me that I was the last one to see Frank, as no one has seen him since. Apparently there were rumors that he owed people money from gambling debts, the people you don't want to be in debt with. As much as I don't like to think about it, I'm pretty sure Frank's way of paying off his debts with those people was to hand me over to those men. And what those men had planned to do with me, I never wanted to imagine. I'm someone who goes on the deep and dark web constantly. It's not what people think, where it's evil and overpopulated with crazy people. That's only a small percentage of the dark web. Years ago, my girlfriend broke up with me, and I put her personal information on a forum, and soon after that, she disappeared. It's been a while since that happened, and I've ran into people that have disrespected me since. I'm not an intimidating guy, nor do I look intimidating, nor do I ever have physical or verbal conflicts. I always think to myself that these people don't know what could happen to them. I work at a fast food restaurant, and at the time of this story, my manager was really on my case about everything. I would be late, mess up orders, have an attitude with customers, and some other stuff I could name, but it's so much. I understood that I was messing up, but the tone that this guy would talk to me embarrassed me in front of my coworkers, and sometimes in front of customers. One day, though, that was the last straw. So one day I walked into work, 5 minutes before I was due to clock in, and my manager out loud said that the window licker is finally on time, in front of customers and my coworkers. Everyone laughed at me. During my whole shift that night, he would direct smart comments toward me, while still yelling at me for everything that I did wrong. I made up my mind. I was going to find that forum and give his information. On my walk home, I was going back and forth with myself about whether to do it or not. By the time I made it home, I made up my mind. I didn't shower nor did I change clothes. I went straight to my laptop and I searched. I possibly clicked maybe 100 links, because on the dark web there are links that will take you down any rabbit hole. A link named Pork Chop piqued my interest. When I clicked it, I was directed to an about page. It only said 6 words. We find it, we chop it. and another link that said, here's an example of what we do. I clicked it, of course. As soon as I clicked on it, the picture went to the point of view from an old school camera, with the date and time in the corner of the screen. The person behind the camera approached the man and followed him. A few minutes go by, and the man noticed what was happening. He turned around and approached the camera while yelling and screaming at the person for following him. Then all of a sudden, you see five huge guys dressed in black wearing a pig mask run from behind the man and drag him into the dark. The person holding the camera turns the camera to his or her face and leaves it there for about 5 to 10 minutes. That person also wore a pig mask, but all you could hear was the man screaming and sounds that I don't want to describe in the background. The camera was then turned back around and the sight that I saw was disturbing. It was something that no one would ever want to see. Some people say that they wouldn't wish it on their worst enemy, but I did. After the video was over, there were links. One said pork and the other said chop. I clicked on the pork and it prompted me to put in a code. I didn't have one, so I backed out. So I clicked on chop. There was information that needed to be filled out, like name, height, description, and place. I filled out all the info for my manager. In the place, it was my job. I submitted the form. At the end of the screen, it said, see you soon. 4 days later, while at work, my manager approached me and decided to apologize for the way he treated me and offered to give me more hours and said that he will work with me more often because he sees potential in me. A few hours later, it was close to the end of the night. My manager helped me with the trash and took it out for me. As I were putting chairs on top of the table getting ready to mop, I looked outside and saw my manager looking over at something, but he looked worried. I moved to get a better look and I saw what he was looking at. He was surrounded by 6 people in a pig mask with weapons in their hands. I ran outside as they swarmed him, except for one person. He had a camera. I forgot all about these guys, and that I put his information on the website. I ran outside as they approached him. He looked at me for help, but I ran back inside and called the police. It took them 10 minutes to get there. When I looked back outside, what I saw was the most disgusting thing I've ever seen. I wish I could get the image out of my head. Between the time of me initially seeing them, calling the cops and running back outside, these guys were gone, but my manager was still there. I went to his funeral the next week. The next day I received an anonymous email that had the whole video. They were watching him this whole time he was on shift. I don't know how they got my email. I never provided any of my information. Till this day, I still feel sick because my manager was starting to be nice to me that day. I can't go back on the dark web.
My name is Steph, and I recently went out drinking one night with some of my co-workers to celebrate a promotion. At around 2 a.m., I decided to call it a night and phone for a taxi. I got in and I told the guy my address and he started driving. I was pretty drunk after the night out, and I actually passed out in the back seat of the taxi. I'm not sure how long I was out, but when I woke up, I looked out the window and we were driving way out into the countryside. I must have been out for a while to get this far. I said to the driver, where are we? I didn't get a reply. Not even a glance at me through the rearview mirror. That awful feeling of realizing the dangers I was in was dawning on me very quickly. I went to pull out my phone to call the police, and I couldn't find it. In fact, my pockets were empty, along with my bag missing. I moved slowly to open the doors, but they were locked. I told the driver to stop, but he didn't answer me. I told him again, he didn't say anything, but he just motioned his finger to his lips, implying that I shut up, while looking through the rearview mirror. At this point, I was terrified. I just sat back in the taxi with tears in my eyes, thinking the worst and what I can do to get out of this situation. The car finally stopped when he pulled into a parking lot next to a river. There were 2 vans there, and about four men standing outside next to the vans. The taxi driver got out and went to speak to the men. I couldn't hear what they were saying, and what I could hear I didn't understand as it was another language. One of the men then opened the van doors, and I could see about maybe three women tied up and gagged crying. I started to tighten my Adidas up because I knew I was going to haul ass when I got the chance. I started breathing very fast, and I could feel my adrenaline kicking in. I kept trying to open and kick the doors, but they wouldn't budge. The men then noticed this and walked over towards the car. They grabbed me and threw me on the ground. They then dragged me along the ground towards the van and tried to force me in there with the other girls. I was kicking and screaming, trying to get out of the men's grip. I bit one of them really hard on the hand and he screamed, "Let go of me." I somehow managed to slip away from the other men and ran straight into the river and started swimming as best as I could to the other side. The men were shouting and getting into their vans, to which I assumed to try and capture me again. But they never did, because I finally made it across the river and started running across the field to get away as far as I could. And I didn't see or hear these men again. I found help and eventually informed the police of what happened. As far as I know, I never heard anything from that taxi driver, those men, and most importantly, those kidnapped girls. One evening, I was looking for an internet cafe because I needed to send a few emails. I spotted one in an old building. The sign said it was on the 6th floor. When I walked through the entrance, there was a dark hallway that led to a small elevator. I pressed the call button and when the doors opened, I stepped inside. In a lot of Asian countries, many buildings do not have a 4th floor. The number 4 is considered bad luck because the word 4 sounds almost the same as the word for death. When it stopped and the doors opened, I was about to step out when I realized that something was wrong. The hallway was in total darkness. By the light emanating from the elevator, I could make out a random piece of furniture covered with white cloth. It looked like it hadn't been touched in years. I thought I might have gotten off on the wrong floor, so I checked the buttons, but none of them were lit up. There was nothing to indicate which floor I was on. Just then, I noticed something moving at the end of the darkened hallway. I couldn't quite make out what it was, but it looked like a person dressed in some type of gown. The figure was moving slowly down the hallway towards the elevator. It creeped me out, and in a panic, I started pressing the closed door button. All of a sudden, the light in the elevator flickered and turned off. I was plunged into the pitch darkness. I was so freaked out, I almost wet myself. Just as I was about to lose it completely, the lights flickered back on. The doors closed. The elevator jolted back to life and began to ascend again. I breathed a sigh of relief. When the doors opened this time, I was at the internet cafe. I went over to the counter and told the girl who worked there and what had happened. As she listened, her face grew pale. She said that some of the customers and a few of her co-workers had experienced the same thing. She had never experienced anything herself, but she told me about the history of the building. Apparently, the 4th floor had been a hair salon at one time. It was prospering and doing pretty good, until one of the women who worked there killed herself in the salon. Nobody knew the reason why. The salon continued to operate, but they were plagued by weird and inexplainable events. Sometimes when customers were having their hair washed, the water would turn as red as blood. Other people claimed that when they looked in the mirror, they would catch glimpses of a ghostly figure standing behind them. When they turned around, there would be no one there. Because of these events, the salon developed a bad reputation and began to lose customers. Eventually, they were forced to close down. The building's owner tried to rent the 4th floor out to other businesses, but when they found out what had happened, nobody would take it. Finally, the owner reduced the price to nearly nothing, and it was rented by a businessman who planned to open a stationery supply store. However,
when they tried to do some renovations on the floor, there was a series of mysterious accidents. The workmen's tools would sometimes disappear, only to be found in strange places. A large mirror suddenly shattered when nobody was near it, and the workman had his hand crushed when the elevator closed unexpectedly. Eventually, the workmen were so spooked that they refused to continue. The building's owner gave up trying to rent the fourth floor out and just shut it down. He had the buttons in the elevator replaced, and it was reprogrammed that nobody could go on the fourth floor. At least that's what's supposed to happen. For some reason, when people took the elevator, it would sometimes stop on the fourth floor, and when the doors opened, some people would see a figure coming toward them in the darkness. I honestly still don't know what that was.
Well, y'all, that is my time. I hope y'all enjoyed yourself. Join me tomorrow right here, same time, same place, for night 20 of the 31 Days of Horror. This has been your girl, Raven, the Serial Poet. You know, I'm going to leave y'all with a thought of the night, and the thought of the night is this. All of you who keep putting things out for tomorrow or next week, oh, I'll do it then, or I'll do it, you know, when I get ready. Let me just enlighten you. For all things that you put out for tomorrow, somebody else has stepped in to do today. So use your time wisely. With that being said, love, peace, and blessings. Pray before you lay. I love y'all, and good night.